Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us this morning. In the first part of the program, we'll be talking about the efforts of countries in Africa to develop through the use of technology, particularly information technology. There's a major conference going on this campus with people from all over Africa here to take part. And we'll be talking with some of the people who are here for the conference in just a moment. What we would like to do, though, is remind you that this is the last day this week that you'll have the opportunity to show your support for this station and for this program. Throughout the year, we do interviews. We have 10 interviews for you every week, a good solid 50 minutes, and there are no interruptions. That's possible because people who listen to this program in this station are also willing to support it with their dollars. Just a couple of times a year, we interrupt the programming and we sit here in front of the microphones and remind you just how important your support is. So now is the time to show that. We're coming down to the end of our spring fundraising effort. It's very important that we stay on track so that we'll have the money that we'll need for our programming next year. And now's your opportunity. Maybe you've been thinking about it. It's been on your list of things to do. Now's your opportunity to make that call and make that pledge. 244-9455 is the number. We also would like to talk very quickly with Craig Cohen. He's in Pledge Central. He's the host of Morning Edition. And you guys were just raising money furiously this morning. How did things end up?
Well, I have two things to tell you about. First of all, we had a challenge to hear from 80 friends of WILL by 10 o'clock. We heard from 80 friends of WILL by exactly 10 o'clock. And the one that put us over the top, Tom Stoddard from Stoddard Ag Service in Monticello, called in with a pledge right at the wire. So I want to say thank you to him and the 79 others who called in this morning in support of Morning Edition. We also were trying to get to $80,000 in our overall pledge total, and we kind of sort of lost track. It was so busy. So we're going to have to do a fair amount of math, and we will try and have an updated total for you later in the hour.
All right. Well, thanks very much. And we need, however, to continue the effort. We cannot at any point say, well, there, we've gotten to where we want to be. We can stop because we are raising the money that we'll use for programming next year. And by the end of our fiscal year, which happens to be June 30th, we need to have $700,000 in the bank. So we're wanting to raise this week as much of that as possible and get as close to that goal as we possibly can. And you can help us by calling us at 244-9455. Well, this week here on the campus of the University of Illinois, here in Urbana-Champaign, there was a major conference going on looking at the issues of technology and development in Africa. And we're fortunate here to have with us some of the conference participants to talk about some of these issues. We have three guests. Professor Babatunde Thomas is Nigeria's presidential advisor on human resources, science, and technology. Professor Walter Al-Hassan is director general of the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research in Accra, in Ghana. He is also the chief advisor to the Minister for Environment, Science, and Technology of his country. And also here with us is Ilesanmi Adishida. He's director of the Microelectronics Laboratory here at the University of Illinois and also professor in electrical and computer engineering. And as we talk, of course, questions are welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line that is good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. And at some point here, if you have questions, comments for our guests, you're certainly welcome to call. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All of you for being here. According to one figure that I saw, I think this comes from the United Nations, at present something like one-half of 1% of Africans are connected to the internet. Is that pretty accurate figure, you think?
I think so, yeah.
So that shows that we have, and that means 99.5% are not. That's quite a way to go, even to if you wanted to get to the point where half were connected.
Yeah, that's one of the issues that we're trying to address here. How do we get information and communication technologies to African hands so that they can become more educated, participate in democracy, because that's one of the prerequisites for development as we see it. Mm-hmm. And the issue is we have very important people from Africa here, presidential advisors and ministers, and they have access to the top. So if we're able on campus today and tomorrow develop some focus and some agenda items that we can take, that people here can take to Africa, Nigeria and Ghana in this case, and also to OAU. And we can start looking at how government and also the private sector within some of these countries start looking at how you can maybe not say leapfrog, but at least advance the cause of development much more rapidly than what is happening now.
Perhaps we can. I would start first with Professor Babatunde, and I know that fairly recently the Minister of Science and Technology has made some comments about the intention of the government to make Nigeria a information technology capable country and key player in the information society by the year 2005, which is quite optimistic. I think I also read another story here. This was quoting a spokesman for the president of the Computer Association of Nigeria, who said that they would like to see Nigeria become one of the major exporters of software in the world. Two very ambitious goals. What are you doing in Nigeria to try to move towards realizing that these kinds of goals?
Well, yes, indeed. Those are rather ambitious goals, as you've indicated. But considering the fact that Nigeria has a tremendous amount of human resources, both inside and outside the country, if we can mobilize these human resources behind these programs, I think that these are indeed achievable goals. Mm-hmm. But the starting point, as far as this whole effort is concerned, is in having a vision. And at the moment, we are very happy that we have a visionary leader in the person of President Olusegun Obasanjo. He has given the type of leadership that has made it possible in a very short time to come up with a national policy on IT, on information technology. And that information technology policy is really the framework within which these goals that you've just indicated now hopefully will be achieved. In addition to this, policy document that is in place, there is also a team that is looking at alternative strategies to make it possible for the country to be able to achieve these goals. IT is something that touches the life of everybody. Professor Adeshida said a few minutes ago that this is an area where you want the average citizen to be able to have access, you know, to information. And in this new dispensation in the country where we have a democratic government in place, if you are going to have decentralized governance, you have to have information being able to reach the nook and cranny of the society. And we're hoping that with the policy we have in place now, we'll be able to advance as rapidly as possible for us to make sure that IT is indeed a tool that can help drive the society, both in terms of its democratic development, but also in terms of its economic development and technological advancement.
In Nigeria today, how many people do have access to computer, have some experience using that, and perhaps also have access to the internet?
Well, the figure you gave actually earlier is definitely applicable to Nigeria. It's a very small percentage of the population that have access to the internet. In fact, the last figure on this, although it's not a very accurate figure, for a country as large as Nigeria, you know, less than 20,000 people have internet connectivity. This is really, you know, abysmally low. But we're hoping that with all the efforts that are ongoing now, this problem can be resolved very quickly. In fact, the whole problem with internet connectivity in Nigeria is largely due to the problem of bandwidth. Okay, and that is one problem that is now being addressed, you know, by the government. And also the partnership of the private sector has made it possible to be able to begin to grapple with some of these challenges.
Let me turn in to Professor Al-Hassan. In Ghana, is the situation, would you say that it was similar to that in Nigeria?
Yes, I would say to a large extent, yeah, it's quite similar to the situation in Nigeria. A relatively small percentage of the population have access to their ordinary computer, and a lower percentage further have access to internet connectivity. But I would say that in the situation in Ghana, though the bandwidth is also a problem, wireless communication, the mere use of the mobile telephone is gaining a lot of acceptance in the country, and because of the way the telecom system has been quite liberalized, you know, the private sector initiative is playing a major role here. And you find out that the normal businesswoman who is maybe illiterate in the Western sense, the Makola woman, you know, the Makola is one of the our biggest markets, you know, in Ghana, and the women there are probably among the
local
most
market.
Local market, yes. Yeah. And they do their business using these mobile telephones, and it's quite exciting to see them doing this type of business. The other spectrum we hope eventually will come up is to widen the access to the computer and the internet connectivity, because that also is gaining a lot of importance, and quite a number of internet cafes are springing up, mainly in the urban areas in the country.
That, I think, here this touches on a very basic issue that I'm sure is very critical in a lot of places, and that is, what's the information infrastructure? Here, probably most people do their internet access through a telephone line, through a landline. You can't do that in Africa.
No.
It seems that the way in which here people are doing it is by using wireless.
Wireless, yes. Yeah. I think that's probably the cheapest way, because putting lines in the ground is very expensive. So the only way, actually, when you look at Asia and Africa, the only way you can ever hope to catch on is to use wireless, and that's very important. Because this can go all the way to the village. I'm from a village. I'm Nigerian by origin, and I still go home. And you find, as Professor Hassan said, you find local women, local men in the villages having access now through wireless telephones. And I think if one can use VSAT and some of these newer technologies in internet connectivity, I think that will go a long way in terms of bringing information to the local people. And when you look at it, I'm Nigerian, and there are very many Nigerian expatriates, professors at MIT, Cornell, here, everywhere. So we have a reservoir, a pool of educated base. What we want to do is to help, just like other emigres have done in the past, help carry some of this technology home, simple technologies that can actually enrich the life of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's a very important point. If you look at the last 2 decades, for example, the various development paradigms, you know, that have been expounded in the continent, for some reason, have overlooked the importance of our compatriots that are in diaspora, and there's a lot that they can contribute to development at home. Mm-hmm. This is one of the challenges, actually, that we are trying to grapple with right now in Nigeria. Is how to mobilize this vast wealth of human resources that is out of the country to try and get them both physically and virtually contribute to development at home. We are really very pleased, I have to say, that the tremendous amount of goodwill out there, you know, has demonstrated to us the readiness, you know, of some of these people to contribute to development at home. And I'm hoping that this will be applicable also in the case of other African countries, mm-hmm. because there is quite a tremendous amount of our best brains, you know, that are out, you know, in America, in Europe, you know,
Asia,
mm-hmm. South America, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. we mm-hmm. should begin to mobilize seriously mm-hmm. behind our development mm-hmm. programs at home.
My understanding that one strategy that has been used in a lot of places is to try to provide access to computers and internet access at public sites. And here in various places where we have community computing networks, we're doing the same thing. Here we have PrairieNet. Yeah. And very much the same thing has happened to try to provide access to underserved people. Have places where you have machines, where there's internet access. You'll provide them with some basic training so that if they couldn't have a computer in their house, here is a place where there's a machine that they can years. I think this is a strategy that's been used in a lot of places in Africa.
Yeah,
too.
That's a lady presented a paper yesterday having school net in Uganda, where in their secondary schools they have computers and their local satellite stations, so that the high school students over, I think she said there are 49 districts that made up the country.
Mm-hmm.
So within each district, all some of the major secondary schools have computers, so that the young ones coming up can start having access and being trained, making it a part of their life, just like what the kids here are used to now.
And just like I said earlier in my introductory remarks, the internet cafes are springing up in Ghana, but mainly in the urban areas. But these are mainly handled by the private sector. They are not like government set up, but the private sector initiative. And they are very popular indeed. In government, of course, libraries, own libraries, you also have these facilities where school kids can come in and make use of some of these things in Ghana. So it's beginning to spring up.
Mm.
And then before I even drop that, there's a major initiative coming on now in Ghana where the universities are all being linked. And this is through the effort or contribution from the DANIDA, the Danish International Development Agency. It's trying to help link up the major universities in the country. Right now, some of the libraries are being linked so that you can source material from one library, from another library you based. You can source material from another library. And it's all linked up to a major library in Denmark. And these initiatives are coming up, and they are going to grow in importance in the very near future, we can see.
Mm. It's certainly, the educational applications are pretty obvious. It's a magnificent research tool, and it means that if you have internet access, no matter where you are, you can link up to the great libraries of the world, other sorts of sources of information. So for students of all ages, one can see just how important this can be. Are there other ways in which people are using this technology, though, for other sorts of things, particularly in sort of business and commercial applications?
And even in medicine.
Yes.
Because some of the papers that have been presented here are telemedicine, because there's a sparse distribution of doctors, of highly trained health professionals in Africa. So being able to have a local nurse in a rural area being guided maybe from the capital in terms of dispensing medicine and treating local diseases is extremely important.
Because in addition to that, also being able to have access to the state of the art, in the area of medical research, so that doctors in Africa can, in fact, interact with their counterparts, even outside of the continent. It's a major development. A doctor that is diagnosing a particular disease needed opinions, of those who are experts in that particular field, can, through internet connectivity, communicate with his colleagues outside of the country who are, say, for example, here in America, and get their opinions, on exactly what he's trying to diagnose. And this is a particular application that we see growing a lot, particularly in being able to address some of the tropical diseases challenges that we face in the continent.
I was also going to talk about the aspect of e-commerce. People are using it as a means of sourcing markets for mainly agricultural commodities. And this again started from the same use of these mobile telephones. Somebody growing pineapple in a rural area in Ghana where they have access to a mobile telephony is able to link up, which is a major principle in European markets, and you're able to communicate. But now, through the agency of the internet, now they can move to source the market and find out what their supply and demand situation is and to direct their exports. So these are very exciting moments for us.
The Ebola crisis in East Africa a few years ago actually was not popularized, but the information getting out to the outside world was through internet. And that's one thing that we've learned in our local conference. That's actually, that made the word get out very fast. Doctors Without Borders coming to East Africa on time.
Mm-hmm.
So those are areas. And as we said, the governments in Africa are changing from military to civilian, and hopefully it stays that way. because most of us ran out because of all the instability to come over here and at least do some steady work. But yeah. I think over the long haul, that some of us are here is going to be a benefit rather than a downside to the development in Africa.
We are getting close to the midpoint of our conversation, and I want to introduce again our guests. We're speaking with Ilisanmi Adishida. He's director of the Microelectronics Lab here at University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. He's also a professor in electrical and computer engineering. Professor Babatunde Thomas is Nigeria's presidential advisor on human resources, science, and technology. And Professor Walter Al-Hassan is director general of the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research in Accra in Ghana. He's also chief advisor to the Minister for Environment, Science, and Technology in Ghana. And we're talking about technology and development in Africa. They're all here taking part in a conference on this campus looking at that particular issue. This is the 27th Annual Spring Symposium on Technology and Development in Africa. And we'll talk some more with them in just a moment. Right now, though, I'd like to take the opportunity to talk with you folks who are listening and remind you that this is an opportunity for you to show your support for this station. We do this commercial free all throughout the year. We don't interrupt the programs. This is one of about 2 weeks during the year that we do that. And we do that for a very specific reason. We have folks who have supported us very loyally for many, many years. And, of course, we want to say thanks to them. But we are interested in bringing people in, new people who have not supported the station in the past. And we found that probably the best way, the most straightforward way to do it is to do this, to just remind you how important your support is. So we take time out of our programming, just a little time, to bring you that message. We're here now raising the money that we will spend on programming next year. And it's very important that we get as many of the people who listen to support the station as we can. Over 40% of our budget comes from listeners. You can be one of them by giving us a call now. 244-9455 is the number. Show your support for not just for Focus 580, but for the other shows you listen to on this station, Morning Edition, All Things Considered, The Afternoon Magazine. All of the shows need your support. Maeve Riley is the editor of our program guide, and she's now in Pledge Central.
Hi, David.
Hi.
And I just wanted to say, too, you know, the international flavor of the programs that you bring. I know my husband's from a foreign country, and I know there's a lot of people in this community that are interested in foreign affairs and things that you don't hear about on the local news, on other media outlets around Champaign-Urbana. And so to get guests like you have here today from Ghana and Nigeria to talking about third world issues, that's something that only you can find on WILL and especially on programs like Focus 580. And it's really important if you are a student here or maybe a faculty member and you have an interest in international perspectives, if you've never pledged before, we really need your support to continue to bring these great programs and guests like the ones David has. And we need your support now by calling 217-244-9455. If you make a pledge at the $40 level or above, you'll receive our program guide, Patterns Magazine, which keeps you up to date on all the programs that we have coming up. And, you know, it's a great way to support, like I said, getting this international programming here.
Mm. I think this is something that we have tried very hard over the years to do. We're lucky that being here at the University of Illinois,
right,
a lot of interesting people come here,
right,
and many of them from outside of the United States. And we think that it's important for our listeners to hear perspectives that are different from ours. All too often here in this country, we sort of think that we look at everything through our own lens.
Right.
We are always asking, well, what does this mean for us? What does this mean for the United States? And I think it's good to hear people whose perspective is different. And I'm not necessarily saying that it's maybe dramatically different, but it is indeed different. It's a different,
right,
way of looking at the world. And I think it's a good thing for us to hear.
Right. And I know, you know, I have a lot of friends that are from foreign countries, and they always say, well, you know, I can't get good news anywhere else except but on WILL. So if you're one of those people, maybe you've lived abroad or maybe you have just an interest in international affairs, you know, this is the only place where you can find it. It's really important that you tell us how important it is to you. And you can do that by calling 217-244-9455.
Well, thanks very much. Maybe we'll check with you again at the end of the program. We'd like to also to encourage people who are listening, if you'd like to call in here on the show, it's the same number we always use. No one will expect you to pledge. 333-WILL or 9455, toll free 800-222-WILL. And we would certainly welcome your questions, comments for our guests. Fairly recently, I spoke with an Indian writer who'd written a book about the Indian economy. And he, in this book, makes this argument that he thinks that in India, what they're going to do is jump over the phase, the industrial phase of their development. That he thinks that they can go virtually from being a largely agricultural nation to one that is largely an IT nation, industrial technology nation. I wonder if that's something that you have thought about in Africa, and whether you think that might actually be something that could happen in Africa as well.
I'm not sure you can take a big leap like that in Africa, because I don't know how you get away from food. So I think, our plan or our vision is to be, a lot of our people live in the rural areas. So we expect agriculture to play, at least in my lifetime, to play a big role in the economy of Africa. The major issue is how do we get information to the people that need it? Yeah. The local farmer, the weather pattern, how do we bring consistent information so that they can produce more things? Because I'm from a village in Nigeria. I knew when my dad is passed away now, but when he was alive, if he was able to get information to modern practices in agriculture, I think that will help in terms of the village becoming maybe not sufficient completely, but being able to produce significantly for themselves and not relying on the government all the time. So that's a big issue. So we want to be industrialized, but at the same time, we want to make sure that I don't think we can do it too rapidly to just move into the IT age. The IT is going to be a tool for development.
And as a tool for development, I think we have to link it, if we really are going to be able to leapfrog. We have to look very carefully, at areas where we have strategic interests. For us right now in Africa, a major challenge is the challenge of food security. India has already gone through that phase. India was a key player in the Green Revolution. Mm-hmm. Okay, there is a new revolution that is ongoing now. That is the biotechnology revolution, which we are discussing in this conference. We in Africa would like to be a key player, in this new revolution. Okay, and using IT can help us advance, our interest, and hopefully enable us to achieve, very strategic goals in meeting our food security needs, in meeting the health needs of the majority of our people, and in helping in general to enhance productivity, in our economy. So we have to be very focused. I think it would be, I always say to my colleagues, let's not try to imitate, others. But one thing we can do is we can emulate, and emulate in our own way, by charting out a very clear direction in which we want to go and where our priorities, are very well clear.
And I think just to add to that, we're not going to say that we're going to put a hold on agricultural development, though that is what has bedeviled our economies from time immemorial. We were not part of the Green Revolution for one reason or the other. But like my colleague said, we are going to use these powerful tools, IT and biotechnology, to help us advance the course of agriculture. A lot of the low technologies or low productivity is due to lack of information. And with IT, we can gather the requisite information for the farmer in the rural area. He needs a market. With IT, we can get him where the market is, and we can move the products so that where we have gluts, we not settle with wastage. We move the stuff to agro-processing centers and to markets. And the same thing for biotechnology. It's a tool where conventional means of plant breeding or agriculture is not able to solve a problem. Biotechnology is a tool which you can employ to be able to get out varieties of crops which are more resistant to insect and pest attack. And by conventional breeding, will probably take a very long time to be able to do this. I will complement this biotech tool with conventional breeding. to develop new varieties which are more resistant to the hostile environment. And through all these means, of course, we enhance the issue of food security and advance the cost of agriculture, whilst building capacity in also IT. Because a lot of people too have said that, well, software development, you know, is labor intensive. And of course, we have the labor source. We just have to build capacity through training and further training in the universities and higher institutions so that we also develop the capacity in this area to develop appropriate softwares for both local use and for export. Hmm. I think that's how we see these new technologies.
You know, I think in the past there has been some criticism of development strategies employed in Africa and elsewhere, the criticism being that the tools, the material, the expertise all came from outside, and that one result has been then those countries employing those strategies were dependent on outsiders for hardware, for inputs, for expertise, and it didn't lead to true independence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is there any fear on your part that this might be just another example in which you're still dependent on
technologies developed elsewhere?
Exactly so.
Well, I think I look at technology as universal. Mm. Okay. Science and technology they are universal. So being able to fish out what you need and then personalize it is extremely important. And I think that's some of the issues we are trying to discuss here. How do we make things that are developed elsewhere, like what Japan does? Take things that are developed elsewhere, personalize it to advance yourself. I think I don't know how many phases of development we've gone through in Africa, but I think the next phase is going to be important in that some of us that were brought up after independence, after all the hula ballads that have been going on for the last generation, I think we are beginning to see things clear that the future in Africa, it's going to rely on us completely. And we welcome help from friends, but at the same time, we will have to develop ourselves and our people to make the next advancement.
Hmm. Yeah, and I think in support of that, this is why the other aspect of this workshop we are holding here is to see how we can build capacity and to be able to internalize most of these technologies. So we see ourselves as eventually complementing, the efforts outside our countries. We develop complementary relationships with fairly advanced technologies outside. And let me give you the example of biotechnology. People look at it as a science, maybe it's way advanced. But this is an area that Africa is building their capacity. If you probably have been listening to the news recently, Monsanto, together with the Kenya Agriculture Research Institute, they're able to develop a transgenic sweet potato variety. Now, they also had the biosafety regulations which allow testing before release. So here you are, Kenyan scientists were able to get this technology from Monsanto, came to some agreement with them, and they were able to come out with a sweet potato variety which is quite resistant to a disease which has not yielded itself to conventional breeding and control. So now the capacity is being built within the carry to be able to do transformations. And this kind of trend is spreading to other parts of Africa. In West and Central Africa, we are also trying to look at these same areas to internalize technologies so that we work as teammates, partners with our colleagues who are developing these technologies originally from the West.
And there is, to some extent, trained manpower, locally, because in both East and West Africa, a whole lot of us have been to MIT, Cornell, Stanford, everywhere. Mm. And whereas some of us stay here, there are many people who go home and actually do very good work. The secret is that many of the good works have not been coming up because of all the bad news due to political governance. So we are hoping, the stability is hopefully at hand now, so that things that are being done will become more apparent and also more utilizable within the country, within the countries of Africa, at least in some key countries.
I think for too long, you are absolutely right, we are being consumers of the products of technologies developed elsewhere. This trend is changing. For the mere fact that there are many Africans who are actually contributed, you know, to some of those technologies because of the fact that they are able to work in an environment that made it possible for them, you know, to do so. Now, these Africans are actually in a position to do the same thing, you know, in situ, you know, locally, but you have to provide them with the means to do so, you know, the facilities to be able to make contributions also to technological advancement. And this is where, in this conference, we are also talking, we've talked at great length yesterday about the need to invest heavily in education. Our educational system throughout the continent today are in very terrible conditions. And there is going to be a need to invest heavily in our educational system at all levels.
This was not always the case.
That was not always the case.
Mm-hmm. In the 60s and the 70s, before all these military takeovers, the educational system was, in many of the countries, were excellent.
Yes, indeed.
Excellent.
But they have deteriorated due to neglect, due to politicizing, you know, of the educational system. And all these have to change, and they are beginning to change. But we need to stay the course, and we need to make sure that we are consistently striving for excellence in our educational system, particularly at the very basic level, at the elementary level, because with good foundation, you know, then we are guaranteed of high-quality students coming up throughout the entire system. But if at the elementary level, at the very basic level, we are not doing a good job there, then we can expect to have good products later on at different other levels, you know, of the educational system. So that level is one of those that we really need to invest heavily in. I have to say that with what we are observing now, our governments are beginning to give much greater priority to education, in fact, with the social sectors in general, than it has been the case, say, in the last decade, for example. And this is very encouraging.
And I may add from the Ghanaian experience. For quite some time, the Ghana government has invested a lot in primary education. In fact, a lot of the World Bank assisted loans to Ghana government has been developing capacity at the primary level. Now, the end result is now that we now get quite a number of young lads and lasses qualified to go to universities. But because we do not give that equal attention to the university and tertiary level, the technical and tertiary level, it's now a bottleneck. You get many people qualified to enter the universities, but there are no places. And then also mainly because facilities in the universities were not expanded, and the quality of the facilities too had deteriorated over the years. So we're creating that kind of a bottleneck. Many people can enter universities, they cannot enter. The quality of training in the university also is declining because the infrastructure is breaking down. So now, one area of focus is now going to be tertiary education as well, so that now the capacity can be built there so that we can widen the scope of intake of primary or secondary level type of graduates. Mm.
We have a caller to bring into the conversation, and we're getting short on time, so I want to get right to them. In Paris, Illinois. Line number four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Not 60 seconds prior to the airing of this program or this segment, I heard on the news on your station where in Uganda they hacked these team of personnel delivering medical supplies were hacked to death. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know what that's got to do with internet and whatever, but it's kind of flabbergasting. That included a nurse, too. You can comment or not. It's just, I'm kind of speechless. Thank you.
I have to say I'm not familiar with the story.
I'm not familiar with the story, but I think in some parts of northern Uganda, you know, they've had some, because of the conflicts in Burundi and Rwanda, spills to that area. So they have an ongoing conflict in sort of part of Central Africa. But I'm not familiar with the story at all.
Yeah. I suppose that it is the case that there are still places where there is
political conflict. One cannot deny that.
No.
But it strikes me that what you're saying is there at least is some reason for optimism to say, in some places, progress has been made in getting past that and moving on to more democratic regimes, more representative governments, places where that people are trying to get past that kind of conflict.
I think the major issues when you look at the history of Africa, it's the way you look at it, the way some countries were put together. So it's, I mean, the wars are much like the wars in Europe that got resolved internally, forming Germany, forming France. Things were not resolved like that in Africa. So that people were put in the same country, but there were no negotiations. What are the common vision to build a state? Mm-hmm. So those are things that have taken a while to be able to resolve. Mm-hmm. And I think in some key countries, Nigeria, Ghana, I think over the next decade, you find that if some of these questions of common governorship, common citizenship, are resolved, that things will actually move very fast. Mm-hmm. So that in Central Africa, I mean, Rwanda, Burundi, they're essentially the same stock, yeah. The same ethnic groups. Mm-hmm. But the problem is when you group all some of these people together who have had maybe fights in the past, but no negotiation, no accountability for what has happened, it's a big problem. Mm-hmm. I always say that most countries in Africa, it's like Switzerland, the French, the Germans, the Italians, all in one country. But maybe sometime in the past they've negotiated and said, okay, we're going to live together. Mm-hmm. But in Africa, due to the way things were put together, there's not been that negotiation to really get all these countries
moving. That issue, yeah. Even though in a number of countries then there have been a number of years since independence, the issue of nation building
is still.
I think Nigeria, for example, has enormous ethnic diversity.
Exactly. Yeah.
So many different kinds of people speaking different languages.
Yeah. Probably more than the U.S. actually.
and that there indeed has been one of the great challenges, I think, in Nigeria to try to get people to identify with being Nigerian.
Nigerian, yes.
Yeah, first. That's right. First and foremost. Mm-hmm. And then secondarily, a particular ethnic group or a particular village, you know. Yes. And it's a major challenge. But I think it's a challenge that the country is beginning to rise up to. People have been talking about the need for a national conference, you know, to discuss, you know, the relationship between the various groups in the country. And, of course, this is a controversial subject matter, but it's one that is definitely receiving some extensive media attention right now. And hopefully soon we'll have to grapple with this problem. Mm. Yeah.
And I think also, as Professor Adishita said, I think you cannot ignore the impact of colonialism.
Sure.
What happened, ways in which European countries came and carved up territories, drew lines, created nations, said this space is ours and that space can be yours, and also the way in which they took advantage of people and set one group against another. They picked one group that they would use for that they would rule through those people.
Middleman,
A great deal of that has to do with the colonial experience.
Sure.
And then the fact that then when those countries left, they just said, well, good luck. We'll see ya.
Yeah.
and pulled up stakes and loaded up everything and then they left and did very little to try to prepare those countries for it.
That's exactly true.
Well, we're at the point, I'm sorry to say, we're going to have to stop because we've used our time, obviously just scratching the surface of the issues that we are talking about. But perhaps on other days and other ways, we can talk about some of these things again. I do want to thank our three guests, Professor Babatunde Thomas. He is Nigeria's Presidential Advisor on Human Resources, Science, and Technology. Professor Walter Al-Hassan, he's Director General of the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research in Accra in Ghana. And Ilesanmi Adishida, he's Director of the Microelectronics Lab here at University of Illinois and also Professor in Electrical and Computer Engineering. Thank you all very, very much.
Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Support for this program is provided in part by Secretary of State Jesse White, who wishes to thank all listeners who are registered as organ donors. Lives are saved every year because of donors like 10-year-old Breanne Bacon of Lincoln, Illinois. The organ donor program means that life goes on. And we also want to thank all of our supporters, the Friends of WILL. Without you and your financial support, we just couldn't do what we do here. And if you're already a supporter of the station, we want to say thanks. And if not, we hope that you could right now take a moment or two and become a supporter. Call us. Call 244-9455 and make a pledge to help support this and other programs that you enjoy. We also want to check in with Maeve Riley. She's the editor of our program guide, Patterns Magazine. She's in Pledge Central.
Yeah, and David, we had a gift from Philip and Jacqueline Brewer, who are friends of WILL, and they really appreciate hearing the BBC in the morning, early in the morning. And I know there's a lot of listeners out there that appreciate the BBC and the fact that WILL AM brings it to them, and also programs like the one you just heard on Focus with David's guest from Ghana and Nigeria talking about third world issues. If you appreciate that kind of programming, call 217-244-9455 and let us know that that's what you're interested in hearing. And I want to point out, too, that we do have a student membership at the $25 level or above. So if you're a student and these are issues that interest you, or maybe you're a student from another country on a tight budget, but you'd really like to support programming here on WILL, give us a call, 217-244-9455.
And we really would like to have the support of as many listeners as possible. Mm-hmm. And we do talk about, we do throw dollar amounts around. And I guess at least every once in a while we should say, yes, we have dollar goals, and we do have people that contribute $75 or $250. But I think we also need to talk about the people and the people goal and wanting to have the support of as many listeners as possible. So the amount that you pledge, that's something that you need to decide. We will leave that up to you, whatever you feel that you can do. But what we hope that you would do is make the decision to be a supporter of the station. More than 40% of the budget to run this place, to keep the lights going and the transmitter on, and to pay our dues to National Public Radio and other program producers, that money comes from you. So what you're doing with your contribution is, in a sense, making an investment that will return you great programming day in, day out, all through the year. You're just helping to pay part of the bill. So you can pick the dollar amount, but we hope what you will do is allow us to include you as a member of this organization, the Friends of WILL. That's why it's real important. Now we'll give you a few minutes that you can make that call. We're coming down to the end of our spring fundraising period. So that's why we'd really like to hear from as many people as we possibly can today.
That's right. And today's goal is $20,000, so we'd like to reach that. It seems like a lot of money. I think we're pretty much on our way after the Morning Edition program, but we need to do that by hearing from you, 217-244-9455.
It's really easy. It's quick. If you'd like to put it on a credit card, you may. Visa, MasterCard, Discover, American Express. If you work for the University of Illinois, you can do it as a payroll deduction. We've tried to make it as easy as possible and give you a couple of options there to choose from. But we're now, as I said, we're raising the money for next year. At June 30th is the end of our fiscal year. And at that point, we need to have in the bank all of the money for next year's programs. And then we've sat down, our station managers have spent a lot of time thinking about it, and they've come up with this figure, $700,000. Mm-hmm. And that's a big piece of change.
Yeah.
But it's something that certainly we can manage to realize by going sort of step by step, day by day, and getting as close as we possibly can to that goal, closer and closer and closer all the time.
That's right. And, you know, you can make a credit card pledge, Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. Like I said, it'll just take a second of your time. We have volunteers sitting by the phones ready to take your pledge.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Maeve, okay. And we'll talk with you again in the next hour. In the next hour of Focus 580, we'll be talking with a couple of people who are here to take part in the Roger Ebert's Overlooked Film Festival. We'll talk with Elizabeth Cottrell and David Arusha. They are writers and producers of the film Jesus' Son. It'll be shown during the festival tomorrow night. So that'll be in the next part of the show. Right now, though, we're going to take a break. We have news at a minute past the hour and an update on the market, so please stay tuned.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Ann Bozell. A bus carrying sleeping middle school music students from suburban Boston skidded off a highway ramp in New Brunswick, Canada, early this morning. Four children were killed and more than 30 children and adults were hurt. Marvin Shapiro is the principal of the Oak Hill Middle School. He says they're coping with the tragedy as well as they can.
There's no specific way, and this is a tragedy. We just have to pull ourselves together and be as supportive of the kids that are here as we can and of the families of the kids that were on the bus.
Police say the driver lost control and the bus overturned several times as it went down a hill. The students were on their way to a music festival in Canada. A tape recording of the conversation in the cockpit of a U.S. surveillance plane shows the U.S. crew tried to prevent the Peruvian Air Force from shooting down a small civilian aircraft. That's from U.S. officials who have reviewed the tape. The effort was unsuccessful. An American missionary and her baby daughter, who were killed in the incident, are to be buried today. NPR's Jackie Northam has more.
35-year-old Veronica Bowers attended Calvary Church in Fruitport, Michigan, just before she headed to Peru to work as a missionary. Her 7-month-old daughter, Charity, was dedicated in the same church. Today, the Baptist Church is where funeral services will be held for mother and daughter, who were shot and killed a week ago when the Peruvian Air Force, mistaking them for drug traffickers, fired at their small aircraft. Bowers' husband, Jim, is due to speak at the funeral. He, their 6-year-old son, Corey, and a pilot were in the plane when it was strafed with bullets. The pilot, who was also shot, managed to crash land the plane in the Amazon River. More than 1,200 people are expected to attend today's funeral. Jackie Northam, NPR News, Fruitport, Michigan.
Federal officials have closed a waterway between Minnesota and Wisconsin because of high water. Bob Kelleher from Minnesota Public Radio reports.
Northern Minnesota and Wisconsin were soaked by more than 3 inches of rain early this week. That rainwater is now pushing up the levels of already high rivers, including the St. Croix that borders Wisconsin and Minnesota. The National Park Service has banned traffic on the St. Croix National Waterway, a popular canoe and fishing route on the St. Croix River. In northern Wisconsin, another popular recreational waterway, the Brule River, has been closed to boats because of high water and because of logs and branches washed into the river. Flood warnings remain in effect for the St. Croix, the Mississippi, and the Minnesota rivers, with a second crest expected to surpass crests recorded in recent weeks. For NPR News, I'm Bob Kelleher in Duluth, Minnesota.
There's been a deadly shooting in Hollywood, Florida. Officials say a sniper fired a pistol from an apartment building, killing at least one person. He exchanged fire with police before he was shot to death. On Wall Street, the Dow Industrials are up 70 points at this hour. The Nasdaq Composite is up about 34. You're listening to NPR News.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Radio Maria, featuring an international lunch and dinner menu influenced by Caribbean, Asian, Indian, Spanish, and Latin cuisines. Radio Maria in downtown Champaign, a restaurant of unusual sensibilities. Programming on WILL is made possible by a grant from Christopher's Fine Jewelry Design and the Dragon's Hoard Jewelers in downtown Champaign, a gallery of jewelry, gemstones, and American handcrafted gifts since 1978.
This is Focus 580, our telephone talk program. My name is David Inch. Glad to have you with us this morning. The producers for the show, Harriet Williamson, Jack Brighton, Brian Wagner at the controls this morning. In just a moment, we'll be talking with one of the creators of one of the movies that will be shown this week as part of the Overlooked Film Festival, now in its third year here in Champaign-Urbana. That in just a second. But before we do that, we do want to remind you here, this is going to be your last opportunity this week to show your support for this program, and not only for this program, but for other shows you listen to here on AM 580. One of the times we sit down in front of the microphones and say, folks, the reason public broadcasting works is that people like you are willing to pay part of the bills. So that's a simple and straightforward message. If you're not a supporter of the station, we hope that this morning you would do that. You can do it right now, as a matter of fact, by calling us. 244-9455 is the number. One of our producers, Jack Brighton, is in Pledge Central. And, Jack, we actually have something that we're offering as a kind of incentive for people to pledge this morning, or at least to give us a call. We have a drawing for a very special item. And, There's Jack.
Hi, David. This is a very special, actually, it's a ticket to the concert tonight at Krannert by Ravi Shankar and his daughter Anushka. Ravi Shankar, of course, the master sitar player from India, who you and I have both seen in years past, and it's a concert that is just going to be outstanding. We have one ticket that we will give to the first person who calls during this hour to our pledge line, 244-9455, with a pledge of $60 or more to support Focus 580 and all the great programs here on WILL.
And this concert's sold out, so there's no way that you're going down to the box office and getting a ticket.
Yeah, and actually, this is a second row ticket, by the way.
Oh, yes, so it's a great seat. One of our colleagues here had it and said, you know, I can't use this. Would you like to give it away? And we said, sure, we can do that. Maybe that gets some people excited about giving us a call. So that's the deal. Again, what is it we're asking people to do?
A pledge of $60 or more, the first person with a pledge during this hour, 217-244-9455. You can make it a credit card pledge if you'd like, and that'll go instantly into the Friends of WILL pot and make you a friend of WILL. And you'll also get this ticket to see the concert by Ravi Shankar and his daughter Anushka.
All right. Well, we'll check back with you in a little while, Jack. Thanks for being with us today. If you like movies, Champaign Urbana is a good place for you to be this week, because, once again, we are hosting Roger Ebert's Overlooked Film Festival. It's now in its third year. He selects a number of movies that he thinks are worth seeing and ones that perhaps, as the title of the festival suggests, were overlooked. And then he shows the film and also invites people who were involved in making these movies, performers and directors and writers and producers. And we're fortunate here to have with us this morning one of the writers of a film that will be shown as part of the festival tomorrow night. The movie is called Jesus' Son, and it will be shown tomorrow night at 7. And these showings are at the Virginia Theater in Champaign. David Urrutia is our guest. Also, we were going to have his partner in production and writing on the film, Elizabeth Cothrell, and unfortunately something came up and she couldn't be with us. But we're glad that he could come and spend a little time talking about the movie. If you have questions, certainly you can call and talk with him here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So, again, if you'd like to be a part of the conversation, 333-WILL and toll-free 800-222-WILL. Well, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I understand that when you and Elizabeth formed your company, Evenstar Films, the first thing that you bought was this book by Dennis Johnson, Jesus' Son.
That's right.
What attracted you to this as a movie project?
Well, Elizabeth had been reading the stories. Jesus' Son is a collection of short stories that Dennis Johnson wrote over a number of years, and they were all individually published in different magazines like Harper's or The New Yorker or Paris Review. And Elizabeth had been a writer pretty much all her life and was always looking at new American fiction primarily, and had been reading these stories and loving them. And when they were collected and published in 92, she gave me the book. We've been friends and working together in the theater for about 12 years now. And so she gave me the book. And I read it. Actually, I started reading it at first. And I was at a particular point in my life where the first story depressed me so much that I actually put the book down. I recognized how brilliant it was, but it was taking me into such dark places that I really couldn't handle it at the time. So I put it aside. A few months later, I picked it up and read it all the way through again and absolutely loved it. So fast forward about 4 or 5 years, we started the film company. We began looking for projects. And initially, we thought of another book by Dennis Johnson called Angels, which was actually his first novel that he published in 1979. And beautiful story, very simple, few characters. We thought, wow, we could make a good, low-budget film out of this book. So we contacted his agent and found out that Angels was not available, had been under option for, almost since the book was published. And so we, Elizabeth said, well, what about Jesus' Son? And at first I was while I loved the book, my memory of it was, number one, that it was short stories, and I wasn't immediately aware of how we could turn it into a cohesive film. So I read it again, and we talked about it, and began to see that, you know, it could be a really incredible film if we could find a way to tie it together. And certainly the story was beautiful, and what it had to say we thought should be out there in the world. And we each had individual reasons and personal reasons of how this story affected us. So we inquired about those rights. They were available. Actually, they were just becoming available. And other people were bidding on it, and we threw our hat in the ring, and ultimately we ended up with it about 3 months later.
Yeah. I understand that it was a challenge. Writing the film was a challenge. It actually took a couple of years. And that, as you say, the book is a collection of stories, but in one review that I read of the book, the reviewer said, well, yes, it's a collection of stories, but it's really a novel. Because it follows, it has this central character, and it follows him. It does have a thread. It has a place. It has a starting place. It has an ending place. There is an arc to this story, and so it's there. But it sounds as if for you, it was still a challenge to find a way to pick among these stories and to construct a kind of narrative that viewers could follow.
Yeah, absolutely. There is. I mean, he does. While Dennis never intended it to work together, the stories do have an arc, and they follow this man's recovery, redemption, number of words I could use. So it is there, but the options, I guess, for adapting a group of stories that do have a central character, one of the things we could have done is just flattened it out completely, just sort of put all the stories together. Or just been inspired by the stories and created some sort of complete linear sort of typical three-act structure. Mm-hmm. But what interested us about this project, besides the story itself, was the opportunity to create a different type of structure. And I don't want to say it's a structure that we invented, because we certainly didn't. There are other films out there that use similar techniques. But we chose to keep it episodic. And while we didn't use ultimately all the stories, we did use a number of them. We combined them. We moved them around. But it was a challenge. We needed to find a way to keep it together enough, or maybe more so than the book, to make a little bit more of a cohesive linear narrative. Yeah.
Well, that's – and for people who are not familiar with the movie, and I don't want to give too much away, so that I'm – because I'm encouraged.